This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Staub Audio Engineering. If you have listened to any of the episodes, you have undoubtedly heard me talk about Mike and the phenomenal audio engineering work that he does. His mixes and masters are truly some of the best that I've ever heard. I love working with Mike on all of our Dreamfield tunes, on all of our Summit One tunes. He is an absolute wizard. Make sure to hit him up, inquire about mixing and mastering prices, and take your tracks to the next level. Oh, yeah. And Mike is also one of the nicest, kindest human beings you'll ever meet. Definitely hit him up and work with him.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of the producers, artists, and creators that are tuning into the show. My name is Cody Christensen, and you are listening to the Chilled Samples Podcast. My dude, welcome to the podcast. I'm stoked to have you on, and I'm mostly stoked because we've been in each other's orbit for a long time. Like it's one of those situations where I feel like I know you, even though we've never had a podcast together. So I'm excited to actually interact and record an episode, man. So thank you for coming on, and just to kick this off, dude, how's everything going with you?
Doing really well, man. Everything's going great. Making tons of beats and trying my hand at different styles and different all kinds of new things.
Awesome, man. Well, and it's for people that might not be familiar with you and your project, can you just give a little rundown of who you are and what you do?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm essentially a trumpet player that got into producing later on in his career. And I got into the lo-fi scene a few years ago, really during the pandemic. Basically, I started listening to lo-fi. I didn't know what lo-fi was before then. And it got me like really, it was really good for me mentally to chill out. And I just really started listening to it a lot. And I decided to look into the genre further because it was super interesting. Like this, it's very unlike a lot of things. And so I decided to look up certain artists that I really enjoyed listening to, and got on Instagram. And I just started following artists, and I was really surprised to see how accessible it was to be able to speak to these artists and to realize that they're not like, you know, like you kind of have an idea of if you listen to an artist, for me, automatically I had the idea that the artist was like untouchable, you know, that the artist was like in a zone apart. In the lo-fi scene, it's not like that at all. You know, I mean, yes, you have some huge names, and some people are have more success than others, for sure. Like in anything, mm-hmm. But the most part, I was very surprised to and pleasantly surprised to see that I could actually connect with so many of these artists, and just if only just to hit them up and say, hey, I really like your music, yeah. And have them write back to you and say, hey, thanks so much. I'm glad you like it. Because I'm like that as well. I really enjoy connecting with people. And that's basically the reason why I joined this movement, I guess, if you could say. It's like, it's really big into connection. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's where it started. So I've been releasing a lot of lo-fi music with trumpet, mostly trumpet related stuff, and some guitar. I also play guitar, so I'm doing some guitar stuff as well on the side. And I have a few projects on the go. I'm just trying a whole lot of different things.
Dang. Well, Fred, I always love to hear when a guest and myself have a very similar trajectory of starting during the pandemic. I, as a saxophonist, you as a trumpeter, kind of having the same mindset of like, huh, well, I wonder if I reach out to these artists. Like, I mean, it seems like an easy way to collaborate if I just say, hey, I'd love to record for you. And I think there's something magical about that time, because it was like March of 2020 for me when I really dove into the scene. Ghost on, Hoffy Beats, Casket Pretty, yourself, myself. It was like, it'd be interesting to really like calculate like that cohort of people in like the mid 2020 of like who jumped in, because it's, because it was an exciting time, especially for instrumentalists to jump in. And similar to you, I took it was a data driven approach. So I had just gotten back to Colorado from like a mini tour in Ohio, playing with my electronic group Crystal Grid. And that was the end of February 2020, right? So we get back to Denver,
right?
Everything shit hits the fan. It's
everything shuts down.
And so our plan of, okay, we just went and we dialed in our set. We're going back to Denver. We're going to crush as many Denver venues as we possibly can with this new live set. And then, you know, that's shut down immediately. And it was, I was a fan of lo-fi, more particular Koi Pond, by, Cloud Cord and Soul Food Horns. Me and my buddy, or my bandmate, Jared, we were, you know, driving to Ohio, and I showed him that album. I was like, dude, listen to this album, man. This is really, really cool. And I, simultaneously, I was reading a book called The 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss.
I still need to read that one.
It's a good one, man. It's a good one. And, I used my stimulus check that I got in probably either March or April, whenever they sent like the first round out in the US. And I used it. I hired a team of virtual assistants to just record a bunch of data on lo-fi artists. So it was essentially, hey, team, look through this lo-fi beats playlist, this jazz vibes playlist, pull out anybody who has more than 100,000 monthly listeners, put them in a Google sheet and give me their Instagram links and their Spotify links. And then, So it was really cool.
That's smart.
It was Tim Ferriss, man. I just, you know, copied some strategies that he had of like, hey, like collect data and you can either do it yourself or you can hire a team to do it. And I hired a team to do it. And then similar to you, I was expecting like, well, maybe I'll get like a 5% response rate of some of these artists who you know, have saxophone recorded for them.
Right.
It was like 30 or 40%, you know, I was like, no way, no way.
Yeah.
All these people want to work together. So, Fred, that was a long way of me saying, I share a similar story and I love that, man. And,
that's great.
Yeah. So Fred, let's back up, dude. Let's rewind and, I want to hear your full artistic story, man. Like when did you first start getting into music and walk us through that journey?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, it started way back. So I've been lucky enough to be born in a musical family. So when I was born, my mom was a violinist in a symphony orchestra.
Wow.
And she basically stopped when she had me. So I've never actually, been a child with my mother working as a musician, unfortunately. Okay. But my dad, on the other hand, was an accompanist. So he's a pianist. He used to be a concert pianist, went to Juilliard, huge pianist, actually. Yeah. Really, really good pianist. So he accompanied students in the university in Quebec City.
Great.
for pretty much my whole childhood and my adolescent years. He retired around the time when I started, around the time when I left Quebec to move to Ottawa, which I live here now. So anyways, very musical family. And I was fortunate enough to listen to all types of stuff and just really be pushed towards being creative musically. I remember when I started playing trumpet in high school, I was about 12 years old. I went to a very small high school. We were like 215 students from like first, like secondary one to secondary five, which is, I guess, the French Canadian grading system for schools. So all in all, I graduated. I think we were like two trumpet players in the whole school. Yeah. I was one of them. So I played for my own graduation.
Cool.
So I've always enjoyed playing trumpet, and then I decided to further that and actually go into performance. So I went to the Conservatory of Music in Quebec for trumpet performance, and I graduated back in 2003, I believe. So it was like with an equivalent of a master's degree in performance.
Wow.
For trumpet, classical, like Baroque, like all the, you know, symphonic type playing, and just you name it. And I had always loved jazz music, and I've always done it on the side, kind of like self-taught jazz music, and basically all types of music. And started gigging as a trumpet player during school. So I was doing classical music at school, and then I was going to the gigs in the evening, playing Latin music, yeah, playing jazz music, all basically what pays the bills. and so when that stopped, when I graduated back in 2003, I decided to do cruise ships. And so I did that for a year.
Whoa.
Yeah, which was pretty cool. Gotta say, there's a lot of cool stuff about doing cruise ships. And one of the cool things is that you get to see, depending on what cruises you get on, you get to see like so much of the world, albeit for a very short amount of time, but still it's enough to like whet your appetite for adventure. And just, you know, like I'm super grateful to have been able to visit so many places. I joined in the Mediterranean. Like I had to grab a plane. It was a last minute thing. Trumpet player on the cruise that I was on, that I've been booked on, had like gotten drunk and basically got fired.
Yeah.
They were looking for a trumpet player last minute, so they called me up. It's like, hey, so are you able to fly down to Naples by tomorrow and get grab this ship? Like, yeah, man. Sure, let's make it happen. So out of the blue, so. It was an adventure from the beginning.
And this this was just after you graduated from university?
It was about a year after. I had done a year of just gigging around, trying to teach as well. I taught high school for a while, like band, and I enjoyed some of that, but I knew that like I needed to do, like at the time I was like 21 years old, 22 years old. And I knew that I needed to do other things other than just I don't want to say bogged down, but anyways,
teaching high school is a grind.
It's hard.
Cohen, of course, who a lot of us know. You know, you can tell it's a grind. And then I have a really good friend who I went to college with, who's. And he's so passionate about it, but you know, he's working like 14-hour days sometimes. Like just wild.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Wild.
It doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. Once you're out of the school, you gotta, you know, grade papers and all that kind of stuff. Like it's a nonstop thing.
Yeah.
So kudos to those that have the drive for that and the love, the passion. It's not easy.
Not easy. Definitely well, not and easy. We need them. Like you and I wouldn't be playing yeah. without them, right?
No, exactly. 100%. 100%.
Yeah. And yeah. Fred, so I want to pause before we dive further into the cruise ships. And I just want to talk.
Oh, sure.
Talk a little bit hear your experience with your parents being such high level musicians just a little bit further. And I guess I'll preface it by saying, have you by chance read Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell? Or
I have not.
So he it's a really interesting book because he looks at successful individuals and he puts data behind it. So one of the examples is the Beatles. And before the Beatles blew up, they actually like they traveled to Hamburg, Germany and played outside of like strip clubs for like 8 hours a day as like 15-year-olds.
OK.
And so he's like, okay. That's where they got the reps. That's where they got the 10,000 hours. So Malcolm Gladwell's the 10,000 right. hours guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And that's what that book is about. And so same thing with like Bill Gates. Bill Gates, you know, is obviously became Bill Gates, but he was also in the town he grew up in or had a college that had like one of the first computers and he had access to it. And it's just one of those things where you look at their lives and it's like, oh, okay. There was a lot of these additional factors that allowed them to become great. And so with you, like you're telling me that your parents are these high level musicians, you come from this musical family and it's like, man, I want to hear more about that because what a way to excel as a musician when your parents are high level musicians. So walk us through like what that looked like, man. And, what your childhood and teenage years looked like in regards to the balance of like music and maybe sports or like, just what did that all look like?
Okay. Well, I will say like, I was always conscious that, you know, that I was in a musical family, especially with my dad having to practice, for a lot of the stuff that he was accompanying, like orchestral reductions of whole like operas and you know, he's needing to shed like a mofo, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes. And so that's what, like, I'd say that's one of the things that hit me the most was just like there was a period of time when it came to crunch time, like my dad would work all day, he'd come home, he wouldn't play his piano, you know, like he'd had enough of an 8-hour day of playing piano. He's like, okay, but when it came to crunch time, you know, he'd like lock himself in the studio and just practice like a madman mm-hmm. for all day, like for days on end, just a million notes a second. Yeah. It was just unbelievable. So that was one thing I remember. Like for me, my brother and I, we didn't really get into music per se until we got into high school. So my brother, he's a drummer. To this day, like he drums on the side. Like he's a great drummer, but like his gig, like he does, he's got a renovation company and he does a cabling company. Wow. So the music kind of took a bit of a backseat mm-hmm. to his daily life, but he still loves it. He's got a studio in his basement that I'm just incredibly jealous of, yeah. but he doesn't find the time to go mm-hmm. into. So we started playing together, him and I, musically. So he started playing drums. I started playing trumpet kind of at the same time. So we started playing just like with my dad playing some of the blues and some jazz standards basically, and just started having fun together. And then that next step was basically doing like the local high school talent mm-hmm. show together, playing a few things. It's kind of fun. It was cool. And then, I ended up needing surgery for, one of my top teeth when I was like in late high school, and I needed to take a whole year off of playing trumpet.
Wow.
So yeah. And I was like, okay. And the dentist was like, it might be a 50-50 chance that you're going to be able to support the pressure from putting the embouchure to your mouth. So like, they didn't really know if it was going to play again or if it was going to, you know, play well.
Yeah.
And at the time I didn't play well anyways, but you know what I mean? Like, so I took a backseat to that. Didn't play for a year. I decided to take up guitar playing.
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend, I used to play a lot of baseball with, in a minor league. Right. And I had a lot of friends through baseball. And one of them was a guy who inherited, you know, his dad's guitar, and he just like loved playing ZZ Top mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I got really into ZZ Top nice. Because of that, like old like rock and that kind of stuff.
Have you watched the ZZ Top documentary on Netflix?
No, I know, but I've been meaning it's to good, check man. It out. Yeah, you
it's
did?
Good.
Yeah.
It's good. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's
throw cool. it on the list.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So like, so I started listening to rock and metal, and I was like super big into like Metallica when, you know, the Black Album hit, and it just got me into like this whole metal thing, punk rock. And so soon enough, my brother and I were playing all kinds of stuff together, you know, in this room, this room with no sound capacity. So like it was just like super, super loud for the neighbors.
I bet.
Like, I guess typical adolescence. So we were just playing all kinds of stuff like Green Day.
Yeah.
Jimi Hendrix things and just, you know, like a whole lot of stuff. And
with full support from your parents, was there any no disdain from a classical music perspective to rock and roll?
You know what? No, that was the thing. Like, I guess I'm super lucky to always have been pushed towards what I wanted to do. Like my parents, okay, they weren't really big into metal, you know, but they recognized, even when they recognized the talent and the aesthetic, you know, like it's not their bag, but they recognized that there's something there. Mm-hmm. Right. And so they were always pushing us to do what we wanted to do and making things happen. So that, that pushed me towards being able to get back on the trumpet and just do guitar on the side throughout my life since then. I've done as much on both ends. I've been doing a lot on the trumpet. That's been my gig for the past almost 30 years. I recently retired from the Canadian Armed Forces as a trumpet player.
Incredible, man.
And that's basically was my bread and butter for the past, like, I guess 20 some odd years.
Wow.
And I've had a really cool musical life, just with the military in itself. Mm-hmm. Like, I was able to do a whole bunch of things. I played for the King of England.
Yeah.
He was like a few meters in front of my face. I was playing taps for him. Yeah, that was like most stressful thing. But he was just a prince back then.
Yeah. Wow. And wow. But, Fred,
crazy stuff.
I'm pumped to dive into that. Because it's a potential career path as a musician that probably not a lot of people are aware of, right? But before we dive into how you discovered that path, I want to talk about the work ethic that I was hearing you describe that you saw within your dad, because it's, you're talking about like him being the madman, like when it came to crunch time, and you witnessed that as a kid of like, oh, okay. Like sometimes you got to buckle down. You're playing, you're playing music with your brother and having fun, but there's like work ethic involved in that. And then just being, being able to graduate from university with a degree in music, there's work ethic in that, man. And, I think and I know going into the military, there's discipline and work ethic. So I'm starting to, to get this theme, and I want to hear how that develops, because as a fellow crazy person, as I like to call it, somebody that likes to work a lot. I know where mine, like, I know who I saw that in, like my parents, and I know what activities kind of helped develop that throughout my life. And I can sense that in you, man. So I really want to dive into that of like, how did your work ethic develop through your teenage years and through watching your parents, and what did working hard look like for you?
Well, okay. So it's a layered, it's a very layered question. Mm-hmm. Required a layered response.
Yes, certainly.
So, I mean, I guess it evolved, right? Because yes, I saw my dad like work very hard when he did work very hard. And my mom as well, like just not musically anymore at that point, but like they were always, you know, working hard. So I started for fun, like I said, and it's only until I got into the conservatory that I realized like I was no longer like the big fish in the little pond, right? And I was just like one of many just kids, you know, starting out, and some were more talented, had more drive than me. Some were further along, and it was just very humbling. And so I realized then and there, like so this is, you know, this is the music scene, or at the time I thought it was the music scene, but it's only a music scene. It's part of it. So I immediately realized that I was going to need to work on the things that I wasn't good at. And I mean, it wasn't easy for me to be humble enough to realize these things and work on these things, because there are so many things you got to work on, right? And I was stressing myself out with trying to, like, I need to be good at this now. I need to be good at that now. I need to know everything now. And that was pretty stressful for the first couple of years. And I was progressing, but I was also very stressed out. So I ended up through some friends realizing that, you know, you kind of just need to have some targets, you need to have some goals. And so to me, during my post-secondary education years, so like musical education years, basically, my goals changed depending on where I was at. You know, at one point I wanted to be strictly an orchestral trumpet player, and so I was trying to practice orchestral excerpts, and I was just, you know, going crazy with all that, and I was just really trying to studying the sound and trying to make the same sound that I would hear on old recordings of you know, amazing orchestra recordings of anything, basically. So which is a super competitive place, you know, and then I started making a little bit of money on the side with other types of gigs, you know, that had nothing to do with orchestra. And then I kind of realized that it's not the end all be all, right? Just to put all my eggs in one basket. I mean, it's cool. It's amazing for a lot of people that can do that, that have done that, and that are super successful doing orchestra, but it's again, you gotta be extreme to get an extreme job like that,
dude.
And I knew a lot of people that were like in their 40s that had tried to do this throughout their 20s and 30s, and they were bitter because they worked so hard and they're still, you know, at the same place they were at. Yeah. 20 years before, and it's just an extremely ungrateful scene. Yes. So my goals kind of changed eventually, and I was still at the conservatory studying with this amazing trumpet teacher, Jeffrey Thompson, who was pushing me to do all kinds of things. He knew I played guitar. He knew I dabbled in jazz, and he was just very, very, he was happy that I was doing more than that one thing, that I was doing what I liked to do, even if it had little to nothing to do with the curriculum. But anyways, I think I grew on that end because I was curious. I was following my curiosities, basically. And so I guess I just started practicing. I practice about 2 hours a day, sometimes less, sometimes, you know, sometimes if it's not working, if the chops are like tired, I would take days off. It's only natural. But I would generally try to focus on aspects of my playing that would have to do with the things coming up in my life. So, you know, if I had a big band lead trumpet gig to do, then I would work on, put an emphasis on like basically weightlifting for the chops, for the lips, for the facial muscles. Yep. And if it, you know, if it was something else, then I'd focus on something else, and eventually learning different things from different places. I started being a little more rounded as a player, and I could play more styles better, you know, little by little. And, that was kind of my approach. And,
And Fred, when I was in undergrad, I wasn't a music major or a music minor, but I was taking saxophone lessons. I played in the symphonic band. I took piano lessons, played in some ensembles, but it was all electives. And most of the music majors that I interacted with seemed miserable, dude, to be honest. You know, because I was doing it for fun. Like, it was, you know, electives. Right, I get to come in and do it for electives. And, and a lot of the music majors were just so stressed. And it was like, this, wow. And it was a serious atmosphere. And as somebody that was, you know, playing the saxophone and like producing dubstep, it was like, geez, this, I don't know, man. It doesn't seem super fun. But it was interesting to be a part of that community as an outsider, as like a peripheral member. So when you were kind of talking about your experience, man, I could see the faces of some of the saxophonists that I was interacting with. And it was like, man, I don't know if these people are happy, you know?
Well, you know, saxophone, especially saxophone, if you're not doing the popular styles, like anything you hear on TV or on the radio, and like anything, like if you're like trying to learn classical saxophone, like, first of all, it's gonna be stressful because it's such a niche thing, and you're quite aware that there's, I don't know, I can't speak for now, but at the time, like back in the early 2000s, late 90s, there wasn't much for classical saxophone out there. So, you know, there's like maybe the chances that you'd get like an orchestral job was if, you know, an orchestra would need to be playing this specific piece, you know, which is, I don't know, Gershwin, I guess. And, you know, if not, then there's very rare, rarely that instrument. So I guess as a sax player, it must be even more of a stress level for that, because the competition is probably higher.
Seemed like it for them, but not for me, man.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. It's funny because I kind of saw it that way as well, because I, at the point where I knew that I wasn't going to go for like orchestra as you know, like a madman, basically, and just put all my eggs in that basket, I kind of took a little bit of a step back, and it was a little less stressful because I was discovering a lot of really cool new things, and I was discovering that I had an affinity to some of those things. And I was just really curious about furthering these things while finishing my studies. But like, I knew that there were more options for me as a musician after my studies than just that one thing that at the beginning I than when I first started, I thought I was going to peg myself into. So it was less of a stress, and it got me to have an open mind to join the military yeah. as a part-time job, basically. That turned into an actual career.
Yeah. All right, Fred. Yeah. Walk us through this transition, man. Of how like you wrap up a university, you're gigging for a year, you have the cruise ship gig for a year.
Yeah.
How do you fall into the military as a full-time musician?
Well, you know what? Like, apparently the Canadian Armed Forces is the number one employer of musicians in Canada.
What?
And that's it's great and it's sad because I mean it just means that there's not a whole lot of work, mm-hmm. right? But Canadian Armed Forces was still does offer a lot of opportunities for music. If you're a musician and want to make money playing your instrument, you can join in the reserves, yeah. play in a part-time military band, and if you know, you can potentially join full-time in a regular force band, and basically that'd be your career, full-time job. So when I was in college, I had a friend that was doing the ceremonial guard band in Ottawa part-time. He had done it for a few years. And he came up to me and he was like, "Hey, Fred, so what are you doing next summer?" And you know, I was like, "I don't know." I was trying to find some gigs or whatnot. And so he said, "So, yeah, how about you want to, yeah, do you want to be able to make like $5,000 next summer?" I'm like, $5,000. That's, seems like a lot. And I said, "Yeah, so what are you talking about?" So that's when he spoke to me about the possibilities of being able to work in the military as a musician. I didn't know before that. Wow. Oh, well, sure, let's check it out. So I applied and I went through basic training, and I thought that I was going to quit halfway through because it was pretty intense. I was like, "What the hell am I doing here?" But you know, after I completed it, then I did my first summer with it's basically the changing of the guard, which is the main gig here in Ottawa for a ceremonial guard. So every day they do this half hour long ceremony on Parliament Hill, change the guard. It's a very, very cool thing. Mm-hmm. So that was what I was employed to do for a few summers part-time. And it kind of, you know, speaking to people within the military, I was told about the possibilities of playing in a wind ensemble full-time, you know, as a reg force member. And so I looked into that at one point. So basically I did three summers part-time. After my third summer, I was like, I need to do something different. Maybe this is not quite for me. So, and that is when I graduated from the conservatory and I took a year off and tried to do, you know, I was gigging around doing more like normal civilian gigs. And then did cruise ships, and then after that, I ended up meeting my wife on cruise ships as she was a dancer in the cast.
Wow!
And so I did that one contract for like 8 months, and then after that, it became clear to me that I needed to, like, I wanted to settle down. The cruise ship gig is cool, but like I was seeing a lot of these musicians on the ships being miserable, drinking their paychecks, and then being miserable that they drink their paychecks and have to accept another cruise ship gig to make money. But then you know, you see the vicious circle. And I was seeing that a lot of really good musicians just being just like hating their whole life. Bummer. Some of them were flat out hating their life. And I realized then and there, it's like, okay, it's nice and all, but I need to set a foothold on land so that people, A, don't forget about me. And secondly, I can start building something for myself. Yeah. And I wanted to do something with, build my life with my girlfriend at the time, who was American. She was from South Carolina.
Nice.
And I was from Canada. So it was like a very hard, weird situation, very long distance. And we needed to figure some stuff out. And I decided to audition for the regular force, for the military. That way I would be able to play my horn, do music that I like playing, and provide for a future. Mm-hmm. And so I got into that for those reasons. I auditioned back in 2006 and made it. So it was really cool. I got a job back in 07 full time. And then my wife came up to live with me back then. We just got married. It all happened at the same time. Like,
wow.
I got a job. I got married in the States. We applied for immigration. We got her up here. And then like, it was just basically we're learning how to live together because we had never really mm-hmm. lived together. We already married. Yeah. And it's just a time of a very, very exciting time back then.
And so are you like 28, 7?
Yeah, I was about 27 back then. So yeah, so that's when I did this like full time, started doing this full time. Wow. And it was really cool. And then I was in a new city because I had to move to Ottawa to work with the band that I was in, which it was in Ottawa. And so I started to get to know the Ottawa scene, the music scene, and started getting gigs in Ottawa, which is completely different. First of all, everybody speaks English. Yeah. Like I'm French Canadian, so like French is my first language. So it was that alone was strange,
yeah.
You know, but it was strange for the beginning, but it ended up being normal. Like I think in English. So,
wow.
It was just a very different time. Like all of a sudden everything was just like new and exciting and different. I was doing a lot of different types of music with the military, which was great. My favorite thing is when we used to do jazz combo. So we played for a lot of government functions around the city, around the province, basically, and abroad. And we always had a lot of luncheons to play for heads of state.
Wow.
So ambient music. So basically just a lot of like a few of us were jazz. Like if I can say that I'm a jazz player, I was able to. I learned on the job, basically. Yeah. jazz. So we ended up playing a lot of jazz, like cocktail hours, and just a lot of really, really cool stuff. That like we ended up just like honing our skills. I mean, me personally, I was playing with guys that were just like above my jazz skills. Mm-hmm. Some of them had studied in jazz. So it was like I was really fortunate to learn from a lot of guys that had done this for like decades.
Wow!
You know, they were amazing. So that was one of my favorite things to do. Of course, like wind ensemble is really cool. I really enjoyed being in a trumpet section. We had like some really really good players. Just to play as a group and just blend together. That was a lot of fun.
So you're playing music in the military. What is, so I guess like what does practice look like? What are your additional military duties that you have on top of playing music? Like Like when you're not practicing together, like what else is required of you?
Right. Well, so every unit, and I think it's becoming more and more so like that in the U.S. military as well, where our unit, or basically our band, is self operating. So we have a stores department, we have a library department, we have a PA department, we have like tech department, which is limited because I mean you need to have very specific skills that anyways, like to different degrees we were running our own thing. So I did a few years in the library just to make sure that you know, we had the right music and every member in the group had the right music and everything was set up. We like admin, like the paperwork part of the job, so that everybody coming in had their paperwork correct, you know, that they knew where to go for financial issues, or you know, to prevent financial issues, and just like, to basically to make sure that everybody is sorted out, mm-hmm. and knows what they're doing, and everything is running smoothly. So there's a whole bunch of different types of gigs. Stores, the stores department, you know, there's just a whole lot of different jobs within that as well. So like when we weren't playing, we were doing our secondary duties, so our administrative duties, which the more you go, the more you have and the less you play your instrument.
Whoa.
And you know, the longer you stay in, generally the more experience you have, and then you get you're usually given certain roles that have more of a supervisory role to them, so that the guys coming in, they know how to learn mm-hmm. to do something other than what they've been trained to do, which is play their instrument. So it just becomes It as you progress in that job, it gets different. Mm-hmm. So I came to a point where I decided that it was time for me to do something else. Mm-hmm. you know, I was doing a lot of things. I mean, COVID hit, right? And then when COVID hit, everything stopped, and I think a lot of us had a chance to reevaluate our lives and evaluate where we're at and what we can and wish we could do and plan, you know, figure out a plan to get to where we want to be. Mm-hmm. So for me, COVID was a bit of a wake up call, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To realize that, hey, look, you know, I just turned 40. I'm going to be 44 now, but I just turned 40, and this is what I've done. And, you know, like what can I do? Like what do I want to do?
Yeah.
And what can I do to get there? And so it was a very difficult time for me personally. Mm. I had a lot of I had to grapple with a lot of concepts that led me into a little bit of a depression. Mm-hmm. And so that also led me into that's when lo-fi started kicking in. That's like I started listening to relaxing music and then stumbled onto lo-fi to be able to chill out.
Great.
And then I realized that lo-fi music is actually a valid way to be creative as a musician, and a valid way to actually earn a little bit of income. Mm-hmm. You know? So I was like, okay, cool. I love making lo-fi music. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, I realized that trumpet would lend itself very well to that. As a matter of fact, like I was listening to a lot of lo-fi music that had like MIDI trumpet on it. I was like, oh man, like that would sound so much better with real trumpet. Uh-huh. So that was part of the thing. It's like, well, you know what? Maybe I can get rid of all the MIDI trumpet.
Yeah.
But no, like honestly, I just really started listening to it in a different light, like not just for relaxing, but as an actual, like I was curious about it, and I wanted to familiarize myself with the style and learn the style as a producer as much as a trumpet yeah. player, but like mostly like the production aspect was relatively new to me. Like I had been doing a lot of just beats on the side, like not, I can't even call them beats, man. Like I was doing compositions. So like, you know, at one point, I guess back in the late 2016 or so, like I was into like shred metal, you know, and I decided, hey, you know what? I have this program on my Apple computer. It's called GarageBand. I've never checked it out. And so that was like my first initiation to production. It was like GarageBand. And I realized right away that I could, you know, like play guitar on top of me playing guitar and just program a few drums. And I was like making all kinds of weird things, man.
Yeah.
and then eventually I stopped and started, you know, just video gaming my eyes out, which was like it's not recommended.
Yeah. Yeah.
but eventually got back to producing music when I started listening to lo-fi again. I was like, you know what? Like I should probably, you know, plug in my trumpet mic into like this preamp that I have and just make some beats on GarageBand. And I started doing that. And after a lot of self-deprecative thoughts, decided to get like a DistroKid account. Yep. And I started releasing a couple things. And I was like, you know what? Like, I like this. This is a lot of fun. And I started discovering other artists at the same time. And it's like, my first experience with lo-fi was Josh, the 77th man. Mm. I stumbled onto his music and I was like, man, that's so dope. And to this day, this guy, like, is so dope, his stuff. And so I hit him up. He was like the first guy I ever hit up. And I said, man, like, I really enjoy your music. I was wondering, like, I play trumpet. I've got a couple songs out already. And I really think that like we can make some really good music together. Like, I'd love to play on stuff that you do. And at that point, I had never collaborated, mm-hmm. and I didn't really know how to do it. So he just explained the whole thing to wow. me, like, the stems process. You know, like I hadn't even known what a stem was.
Yeah.
so it's really cool. It's a really cool thing.
Yeah. So Fred, when I was taking saxophone lessons and playing in symphonic band, and so when I was in university, at the same time I was learning production, and I had Ableton, and I remember I brought my laptop into one of my saxophone lessons to show my professor, Dr. Walters, who recently passed away, so rest in peace, Dr. Walters. But he I remember he was so skeptical, and I just couldn't. I couldn't effectively demonstrate the power of Ableton, because like here's this master of music, this mm-hmm. incredibly talented musician, and I'm showing him Ableton, yeah. trying to be like, dude, look at this,
right.
like look yeah. at this, and he's like, yeah, 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 and I'm like, I don't think you understand. Like I don't think you understand, dude. Yeah. Like you can do whatever you want in this program.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was just he was just so uninterested. And I was blown away of just like I can't believe it. And talking to my buddy who he's the guy that still teaches And he still goes to our college regularly for all sorts of stuff because it's a smaller community. But I was like, dude, do they have a production program yet? Like in the music school? And it's like, no. And I'm like, why not? You know, like how mm-hmm. how is there not yeah. an introduction to production for all of these phenomenal musicians? And so I kind of want to hear your perspective on that is coming from somebody as a master instrumentalist. Like what were your thoughts of production? Like first you got GarageBand, put it down for a little bit, but like, as you were I'm sure you kind of saw it in the periphery a little bit, you would see glimpses yeah. of it. And so like kind of walk us through yeah. like your perspective on music production as somebody who's a master mm-hmm. musician.
Okay, so the master musician, it's funny because for me, like production started back in the late 90s. So I had what was probably essentially the first music program that Microsoft ever built. It was like Microsoft Session 1.0. and it's basically like music notation and it's in MIDI music notation. So you could create sounds and you can write music notation and it's going to sound like the instruments that you plug in, and you can add, like at the time it was super limited, right? You couldn't even extract the files. Like you couldn't even extract the music notation if you wanted your friends to play it, you know, like it was like so basic. So I started, like back then I was like into like Bartok and Stockhausen and just like Stravinsky, and so I was trying to play write all kinds of weird beats, right? And I was like losing sleep over that. I'd come home from the conservatory, and then I'd hop on my computer like in the evening and just compose random ditties till yeah. like the first, you know, sometimes all night.
Wow.
I did that for a couple of years, and then eventually I guess around the time when I joined the military, and I mean, I guess video games became a bigger thing.
Yeah.
I kind of took I went on the side, and I didn't take it up until later with GarageBand. So I guess basically like over a decade later, I started writing music again,
mm-hmm.
In a completely different mindset. 'Cause I wasn't into like Stravinsky anymore. I was into like death metal,
yeah.
you know, it's just completely different. So, that's how I started. I really, really liked the capacity, like the potential mm-hmm. that programs had to create what was inside my mind. Yeah. Right. And, I like actually even like when I was a kid, when they first came out with like, it was a Super Nintendo game. It was like Mario Paint. There was this part of the game where you could actually program, like they had icons and each icon was a different sound.
Whoa.
And you could put it on a grid and you'd play it back and it would make music.
Wow.
And like, that was like mind blowing to me. I was like, holy crap. You can actually compose and hear it in real time. You know, I guess programs were already out by then, but I wasn't really in the know. I don't mm-hmm. I don't even think our internet was a thing. So, anyways, like music production was a bit of an abstract thing at first, but it became something that I was super interested in, I guess back, you know, maybe 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And, I started to really try and get better at like teaching myself how to do things mm-hmm. and learning by making mistakes, production errors, right? Like, why does this sound like crap? Well, maybe it's because, you know, like your gain's up the, just get all the way to 10, you know, like
yeah.
funny things like that. I mean, fast forward to now, like I'm now working on Logic Pro.
Great.
Which I love.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still like, a lot of the producers that I really admire are playing all kinds of different types of interfaces, which I mean, they kind of interest me. But I guess for me as an instrumentalist, I see the potential in going with like Ableton or even just an SP404. Like that seems cool to me. But I guess for the moment, I'm like really enjoying writing music and just setting it up, you know, to be played instead of having to do it in real time.
Yeah.
Which is it's completely different. You know, I can understand if I could do like a live gig and just have Ableton, mm-hmm. I can just like actually create in real time, which
yeah.
I might get to that. Like
yeah.
But for now, like I'm just trying to create music that I like making.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is what this is all about. And Fred, we're already hitting an hour, dude. This has been an awesome conversation. Well, and I'm stoked that we're finally able to make this happen, dude. And I mean, we have so much more to talk about, so I'm excited to get you on soon, because I already have questions. But Fred, thank you, dude. What a cool story, and thank you for sharing it. And I think it certainly opened up my eyes for potential career paths that like I wouldn't have even considered the military. Right. And there might be somebody that listens to
this
episode that is like, whoa, okay, well maybe that's
an
opportunity for me too. So Fred, thank you so much, man.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Pleasure was all mine.
Thanks, man. Well, we'll make it happen again soon. And everybody tuning in, make sure to listen to Fred's music. Links are in the show notes. You know the deal. Thanks for listening as always, and much love. Peace.
Thanks. Take care.